Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Welcome everyone to episode 65 of Finding True Wealth. I am Nick Hopwood, the founder and president of Peak Wealth Management. And today we're going to be joined by Michael Spath, the host of Inside the Huddle on WTKA 1050 AM from 10 AM to 1 PM on each weekday. Starting in 2019 for the football season, Peak Wealth has become a sponsor of Inside the Huddle. And I've gotten to know Michael pretty well over the past few months. And I started thinking to myself, you know, how cool is it that this guy gets to talk about Michigan football, Michigan basketball, every day, write about football and basketball, you know, pretty much immersing himself in what he loves most and making a living out of it. So I thought, how in the world can someone get in this position and what is it like? So Michael agreed to the interview and here we are. Okay, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. You have a radio show, and you're like a blogger, right? Like, how do you describe yourself?
So, I host a sports talk radio show here in Ann Arbor. I've been doing it for four football seasons now. That's kind of how I keep track of it. Back since August of 2016 is when we got started. And then I also am a co-publisher of a website, WolverineDigest.com, which is part of the Sports Illustrated family. We have a couple of people that work for us. And similar to Rivals.com and 24/7 Sports and a couple of ones out there, we make our bones by covering Michigan football exclusively.
So my favorite thing is Michigan football. And you get to talk and write about Michigan football all day, every day. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would say this, I'm a hit at parties because everybody wants my job, or at least my friends do. And a lot of people, when they find out, I mean, you may not believe this or not, you may or may not believe this, but I generally don't go into a party and like introduce myself like, hey, I'm Michael Spath. I'm a sports talk radio show host. Because the moment you do, and my colleagues will tell you too, the moment you say that, like, every sports fan in the room wants to chew your ear, right? They don't even want to really get your opinion. They just want their opinion validated. So I try to steer clear of it as much as I can, but it's an awesome job. It really is. I mean, my brother's an accountant. My sister's an accountant. My wife's a human resources manager. I mean, they're all former accountants, right? Yeah, former accountant. They all like their jobs. But if we're being honest, like, I have the coolest job of anybody I know. Other than the guy who like tastes beer for a living, he might have a slightly cooler job than me.
He's not going to live as long though.
He might not, unless he's really smart and he just like does like little samples. Right. But yeah. No, it's a really cool job. We hang out in the press box for games. I mean, last week, Michigan, Notre Dame, it was brutal weather. All the fans, I give the fans so much credit. I'm not as tough as you guys are. We're sitting in the press box. We're in like a, you know, climate controlled and, but it's really cool to interview the players, interview coaches, and just be able to talk about, you know, what we love, what our biggest passion is 5 days a week, 15 hours total a week.
So do you consider yourself like an sports entertainment show, or do you say, hey, I'm a real analyst kind of guy? Like, how do you look at that?
Well, I think you can be both. I will say this. I stopped pretending. I took off the I'm an objective journalist hat a long time ago. In my previous life, I was just a sports writer, managing editor for the Wolverine and the Wolverine.com. And I really tried to be as unbiased and as objective as I could be. When I came here, I kind of looked at it a little bit like, I mean, if you listen to the Detroit Tigers broadcast, you listen to the Lions broadcast, the radio broadcast, I mean, they're getting paid by the team and they're essentially fans that are supposed to give you an expert opinion because of the fact that they played the sport or they've gone to school and they've been a play-by-play guy for a long time. I don't get paid by Michigan, but I do kind of look at it as I consider myself 20 years covering the team, an expert on Michigan football. I consider myself a good analyst. I talk to a lot of former players. I break down film every week with Devin Gardner, so I know what I'm looking for and how guys are performing. But I consider myself essentially a sports entertainer. Okay. And my goal is to engage the audience and entertain the audience because ultimately the people that I answer to are not necessarily the audience. The people I answer to our advertisers and clients. And what do they want? They want people listening, and they want people paying attention, and they want those people that are engaged in who you are and buying into your personality and just everything about your show. That's what my end goal is. And so that's how I try to treat every single show, as entertaining and engaging the audience.
So growing up, I trust you're a big sports fan as a kid.
Absolutely. Yeah, a huge sports fan. My dad had season tickets. We used to go to all the games when I was a
Michigan
kid.
Michigan fan?
All the Michigan games when I was a kid. I mean, we played soccer, football, basketball, baseball. We expanded out to other sports once we realized that we weren't going to make the Major League Baseball or college football or any of those things. But I'm one of three brothers, the middle one. And it was, I mean, every, you know, Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, it was sports, sports, sports in our house.
Gotcha. And then you went to Michigan high school, 98, Michigan 02, right?
Correct. Yeah. I just needed 4 years. I wish I took five. I wish I took five or six. I stayed in college forever. I had a degree in kinesiology, sports management, communications at Michigan. It was really on the early stages of kinesiology at U of M. The program actually started in the 70s, I believe, but they really hadn't taken it too seriously until the 90s. And then they started introducing like sports business classes and things of that nature. Now it's a school that you have to apply to coming out of high school. And you get in and you've got to go through a rigorous, like you got to show an ability to, you know, take business school classes and things like that. And so it's harder to get into than when I was there. But it's a great program, and it kind of set me up for a career in sports.
I think my senior year, I took a class called sports marketing, and it was like the first online course available. It was fantastic. Didn't have to leave the house. Just showed up for a test at the end.
I mean, that's. I think that's kind of like college today, right? I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not there, but I think you can take a lot more classes online these days.
So in Kines, you're thinking, you know, certainly by junior, senior year, what am I going to do?
Yeah. So a couple of the internships that I had is I worked for a company, a marketing firm that their chief client was Ford. And they used to entertain executives at races throughout the country throughout the summer. So wherever there was like a NASCAR and IndyCar race and Ford had a presence there, they would welcome, you know, whether it was 200 dealership owners or things like that to those places. And then they would wine and dine them for 3 days, for Friday, Saturday, and a little bit of Sunday when the race was. And so I did that for a summer. I was an intern with, I was supposed to do an internship with the Detroit Tigers. That actually kind of fell through. I was a little ticked about it because I was supposed to do some community relations and learn that side. I did an internship with the University of Michigan athletic department. I was just trying to bounce around. I thought I was going to end up like in sports marketing. And then when I graduated from Michigan, I'll be honest, like, because, you know, I don't think there's one path to get to where I am today. When I graduated from Michigan, I applied to about 50 jobs. I applied to sports marketing jobs. I applied to journalism jobs because I had a little bit of experience. I had a lot of experience in high school. I was editor-in-chief of our school newspaper, and I did a little bit of writing in college. So I applied to those jobs. I applied to, ticket sales jobs all over the place because I really didn't have a
ticket
central.
Sales?
Yeah, like to sell tickets to Pistons games or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I get those calls.
Yeah. I would have been one of those obnoxious people. Thankfully, I wasn't. So I was all over the place. And then the first job I got actually was to be a sports editor at the Hillsdale Daily News in Hillsdale, Michigan.
Our friend Rick Hogue knows about Hillsdale.
Does he?
Yeah, that's where he went for undergrad. Yeah,
he went to undergrad Hillsdale. So, yeah, I mean, it was an experience. I didn't really like it. It was a really small town. I have a colleague who's from New Lothrop. I don't know how he did it because, like, it's like one maybe stoplight in the entire town. Like, I'm from a suburb of Detroit, and so it was just much busier. And I was there for about 3 or 4 months, and then the Wolverine magazine, a magazine that, you know, you Nick, and probably some of your listeners grew up with or have known from being Michigan fans, they had an opportunity, and I jumped at it. I applied for it. I'm honestly was probably the least qualified person. I think I got it because I told the owner at the time that I'd work for free, and then he was like, okay, well, here's a starting salary of $12,000. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it was low. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like below the poverty line when he offered me the first salary he did. But of course I'm 22 years old and I took it in a heartbeat. And then that's what started my sports journalism career.
Now, if you were giving advice, you mentioned, you know, a minute ago, if someone was trying to break into sports talk or sports writing, Now, what would be your advice today for someone like that?
I would say someone do exactly
like me,
if, what...
looking to shift careers or something, you know?
I would tell you that you're probably too late and you're probably screwed at 40 years, but you never know. Maybe you could at 40. I would say if you know that you have that passion at an early age, just attack that passion. I'll give you an example. I have an intern for Wolverine Digest named Jake Sage, who's an 18-year-old high school senior out in New York. And he reached out to me and said, hey, I would love to do some writing for you. And, you know, with his schedule, my most important priority was his education, right? I didn't want him to do like 3 or 4 articles a week. And all of a sudden his dad telling me like, well, he's now starting to get B's and C's because he's not getting his classwork in. He does 1 story a week. He writes an opponent preview for us. He does a really good job. He's really good at taking feedback and like adapting to what we do. And then he's going to, you know, he's applying to Michigan. He's applying to a couple other schools. And if he gets into Michigan, he's going to keep on writing. He's going to expand it to 2 stories. I think there's a lot of websites out there that either cover Michigan or cover Notre Dame or cover Ohio State or cover the Detroit Lions. There's a lot of websites out there, and they're always looking for someone early on in their career just to help them out a little bit. And I will tell you that most of them are not making money mm-hmm. or making just enough money to be able to pay the owner of the site. And so you say, hey, I'll you know, do an internship. I'll work for free for a couple of years and just build your resume. That's what it comes down to. It's like you have to be willing to sacrifice. You have to be willing to build your resume early on in your life for the opportunities that will come to you later on then.
And what do you think the vision or, you know, the visual of the future of this industry looks like with terrestrial radio, internet radio, you know, talk radio versus, you know, streaming music and competing with others like ESPN?
Yeah, I think when I've thought about this a lot because, you know, about a year or two ago, I actually considered, you know, whether it was the right move to leave, you know, daily sports talk radio and jump into like podcasts. Everything, people listen to podcasts. If you turn on a podcast and, you know, there's no ability to turn the channel to a different channel during the commercials, because if you don't, the podcast stops, right? And kind of thought like, well, maybe this might be better for advertising opportunities and the whole thing. And I still think that's it's a medium, but I think that you're a little limited because people have a shorter attention span with a podcast. I mean, it's about 30 to 45 minutes. You got to get everything done. You got to get everything accomplished in that time. And if you don't, you know, your audience just kind of, that's it. They're moving on. Sports talk radio. Yeah. I mean, you might not get that audience member for 3 straight hours, but they're jumping back and forth into your conversation and they're listening to it consistently throughout the day. I think as long as sports remain in the capacity, in some capacity, which they do, as long as football remains in some capacity, which I think is the biggest, if we're talking about if sports talk radio exists in 10 years or in 15 years or in 20 years, I don't think it has anything to do with radio. I don't think it has anything to do with radio competitors. I think it has 100% to do with sports and whether or not the NFL exists in its form in 20 years. If it doesn't and that goes away, then I think you'll see a lot of these podcasts and sports talk radio go away because football is what drives the conversation for 6 months out of the year. The other 6 months of the year, you can fill in with basketball, you can fill in with hockey, you can fill in with some soccer, you can fill in with some baseball, but 6 months to 8 months of the year are about football because we're a football mad society. And that's where I'm keeping my biggest attention looking into the future.
What's the funniest story that you can share with me and my listeners about something that happened behind the scenes or live on air or anything like that that was just nuts? A big mess up, maybe.
Well, I don't know if it was a big mess up. I'm going to keep the woman's name and her company out of it. About this summer, I like to throw some freebies out there. And so as I attract clients to potentially come on our show, I always say like, hey, the first one's free. You know, there's a lot of companies that, you know, I'm a member of Orange Theory or I go to a different gym or sometimes you go to get like ice cream cone and the first one you ever have is free because they're just trying to entice you. And so I offer that to my advertisers. The first one is free. The first interview on air is free. And so we had a woman on from a company in Detroit, and she brought her 3-year-old daughter with her. And the 3-year-old daughter, very sweet, and she was just kind of like telling her, like, you know, just be quiet. Like, just stay.
I can see where this is going.
Just stay silent. And while I'm on the air, the daughter climbs up onto the mother's lap and starts breastfeeding.
Oh, no.
Like right in front of him, like, and I mean, like the woman just like picks up her shirt and like, boom, just out there. And I'm like, at first I honestly, I was like staring directly at it. I was like, I'm like, what the hell is happening here? I didn't know what to do. And then I realized, like, you're staring right at her boobs. So, like, pick your eyes up. And so I pick my eyes up, and I'm just, like, making eye contact with her. And I was, like, doing everything in my power not to look at what's taking place. And the little girl finishes. She, like, switches, like, sides of her mom's lap, hits, like, smacks the woman's other breast, and then starts breastfeeding on the other side. And this took place through an entire, like, 15-minute interview. And one of my colleagues, Zach Shaw, was sitting in his spot, and he didn't even notice it. He was, like, over there, like, doing his work, and he wasn't paying attention. He didn't even notice it. And I'm just like, what the hell just took place in front of me? So that was pretty...
Yeah, there's a couple things there. Three is a little old.
Yes.
Okay. And number two, or the fact that you don't have a kid yet, right? That makes it much more uncomfortable. So a year from now, it won't be so traumatic for you. Okay.
I thought a little bit of a heads up.
Yeah,
a little bit of a heads up, like, hey, my daughter,
and no cover blanket.
No cover blanket. Yeah. Completely, like, unapologetic.
I'm not gonna blame you. Okay.
It was pretty interesting. That just happened recently. I'm sure there's a lot of other stories, a lot of things.
All right,
happened,
what about the coolest, most proud moment? Like, you know, interviewing Charles Woodson or whoever, you know.
Charles Woodson.
Cassie Russell.
Yeah, I would say both those guys. I mean, Charles Woodson, you know, growing up, I was a senior in high school in 1997. I was accepted to the University of Michigan the day that Michigan beat Michigan State. And Charles Woodson made the most famous interception in Michigan football history along the sideline. So while I don't get very overwhelmed or in awe of many athletes that we bring on this show, Charles Woodson for me was like a hero growing up. Yeah. And when we had him on our show for A Game My Life and talked to him for about 35 minutes, that was really, really cool. I mean, he's both a humble guy, and yet he understands that he was damn good at football, and so he doesn't shy away from that. So that was really cool to see. For my a little bit of... My dad used to have a bucket list. My dad passed away when I was younger. He's the one that passed football and sports and passion on to me. And so my dad growing up in the 60s and 70s had his own Michigan football, Mount Rushmore. And so along the way, I've been able to interview all four of my dad's Mount Rushmore guys. Interviewed Rick Leach, interviewed Ron Simpkins, interviewed Dan Dierdorf, and then just last year interviewed number one AC Anthony Carter.
That's neat.
And I will say that Anthony Carter was a little bit of a letdown. He wasn't as cool. Like, you build them up in your head, right? What you think are going to be. He wasn't what I thought he was going to be, but it was still really awesome to meet him, to take a picture with him, to, like, be able to check off my dad's bucket list. So that was cool. And then just a couple of weeks ago, Cassie Russell came in here. And Cassie Russell, for those listening to your podcast who don't know, is considered the greatest college basketball player in Michigan history. I would say at University of Michigan. In the state of Michigan, he's probably number two behind Magic Johnson. So he is one of the most famous. He is, and he was a number one draft pick of the New York Knicks in, 68 or around there. Super nice guy. Played for 15 years in the NBA. Coached at a traditionally black college down in North Carolina for a long time. He came in here with a little bit of a fan club, his girlfriend and his agent. And then it was so cool because as he was talking, the voice of Michigan football, Carl Grapentine, who announces the games at U of M, he was listening and he drove his car over here just so he could meet him. Ira Weintraub, our station manager, his dad showed up just to meet. I mean, people came out of the woodwork to meet Cassie Russell. And for normally that interview is 30 minutes long. I think we had him in here for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, because no one wanted him to go. He was just so cool and gregarious and a gentleman. I don't know. If I do this 10 more years, I don't know if I'll ever top that interview.
Well, I was listening live that day. I didn't come here. I didn't think I'd be welcome. But it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting because, you know, I'm 40. Like, I graduated. I was a freshman in 97. You know, I don't know that much about Cassie. I, you know, see the house that Cassie built and all that when you're at Chrysler. But I learned a lot, and then that inspired me to actually go back and listen to the Woodson one, and that was a great interview, and I can imagine the two of those would be on the top of my list as well. Okay. Well, Michael, thank you for coming on the podcast today. I think it's interesting to share, you know, the journey to get to where you are, and people look at, you know, you get to be on the radio every day and talk about football. People are interested in that, and and they think, wow, I wonder, you know, how you get to be in that position. So thank you for sharing your story and some other details. Appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Anytime. If you ever want to talk about the business side of it, there's a lot more that goes into it, having your own show than just showing up at. We're on from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. I don't show up right at 10 a.m. I'm here, you know, 90 minutes beforehand every day. I'm always thinking about it. I'm always doing things. I'm kind of, you know, you wear a lot of hats as your own show host and as your own business owner. And so there's a lot going into it. It's not an easy job. That's the one thing I would convey is, and don't expect any sports job if you get into it to be like, well, it's just going to be talking about sports all day or writing about sports. It's going to be super easy. There's a lot of challenges in any career that you go after. The one thing I will say is if you go after something that you're truly passionate about, it makes all those challenges easier to put up with.
True. And, in a meeting that I have with a client, like maybe it's an hour long. You don't just see that hour. There's hours and, you know, actually decades now of prep time that goes into that. And so when you show up on the radio from 10 to 1, there's quite a lot of work that goes into it before and after.
It's the perfect example is you just said, but like think about like a doctor who's about to perform an operation. You don't want that guy to just be like, hey, I'm walking into this thing and I'm just going to, you know, he's got to take out a lung. Sure. We'll just 5 minutes beforehand. Like, oh, yeah, what's the patient all about? What's he doing? What are we doing here today?
You know, you've got to be at your best and you've got 30,000 people or whatever listening. You have to be at your best. You know, you can't be hungover or, you know, whatever, you know.
You can be, it's just not your best show.
Right.
I'm not admitting to anything. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And we have great enjoyment out of every single day.
All right. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Nick.